the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that's been here, there and everywhere this week. Coming up, Parker decisively wins the Battle of the Bruges Brothers. It's a magic midweek for Blades, Lamps, Hoops and Hughes. Ian's inevitable exit from Bolton and Barrow are winging it. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we hope you're well. Thanks for joining us for this week's show. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by my two EFL experts. And boy, have they been earning that moniker this week. Adrian Clark's back with us from Swansea to the East Midlands to London. You've been all over the gaff.
All over the gaff. I'm not in the car as we speak, which is a bonus. So I'm all here for it. But yeah, lots going on. But it's all related to football. So I'm not going to moan. Love it.
It's a glamorous lifestyle, that's for sure, as Sam Parkin can attest from the Swindon, the Plymouth Marriott as we speak. What a life it is that we lead, Sam.
I could give you a full critique of the Swindon Marriott, mate. Don't worry about that.
It's not as salubrious as the Plymouth one, is it?
Do you know what? I should get myself a little one bed down here, shouldn't I? I have frequented Devon and Plymouth Argyle in particular many a time across the last 24 months or so. However, I'm about 100 yards from the water, yet I don't think I've ever seen the seafront at Plymouth. So that will be my ambition for the morning, to go and get a nice little Bill Rothy somewhere before I set off.
A Bill Rothy? Never heard it. Never described as that before.
It's a coffee. And as you can probably got that. Hear the rhyme. And I believe, and I'm going to set myself up for a fall here, he was a goalkeeper, and I think he plied his trade at Leighton Orient. Matt's doing some typing as I look. Can you
mainly confirm? Known for his 328 league appearances at Leighton Orient. Yeah, 70 years young he is now. He'll turn 71 in a couple of days' time, actually. Tell you what, Sam, you've gone through his teams. You might have guessed Crystal Palace, Brentford, Millwall and Barnet. Could have been all day waiting for you to remember his spell at Leixões in Portugal, 88 to 91. Bit of a trailblazer he was too. Maybe
universally known for a cup of coffee in my circles.
I just think that's the most random use of slang I've ever heard.
Give me another one. Works perfectly, didn't it?
He was born in Stepney, which is obviously good for a goalkeeper. Anyway, that's enough about a former Canterbury City stopper. We ought to talk about Football League. Before we do that, though, let me remind you that our partners at Quinbet have a new offer for you. You can now get 50% back, up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet, up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus only, and for new UK customers, visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. All right, we're going to take a look back at the midweek that was next. And we're going to start where Sam is right now in Plymouth. Sam, is that Miron Muslic I can see behind you just settling his bill and checking out? No, maybe not. We're not quite at that stage yet, but it certainly was not a good night for him. Good night for you, though, on Sky Commentary. I mean, is this one of those games where you do the first half and then at halftime you're thinking, it's going to be a struggle for the next 45 minutes because this game is done and dusted?
Absolutely. The voyeurs at home, of which I am one, you're kind of rubbing your hands together and thinking, oh, I quite fancy a 10-0, 11-0, 12-0. And when it doesn't transpire in the opening minutes of the second half, you probably switch off. So, yeah, I think the three of us have probably all been there. It was a lacklustre second half for obvious reasons. Argyle shut up shop to a degree, showed a little bit more endeavour, and Burnley had the luxury of playing in probably second gear, if they even reached that, after the break. Yeah, difficult because I don't want to lambast the Argyle players when you're on the commentary, and you don't want to go too overboard about Burnley's performance, because if there's any football cliches listeners on board today, it was a bit of both, I think, in that second period. I really enjoyed watching Burnley, as I have done throughout the season. I thought the movement is terrific, and I was pleased that Scott Parker's comments, I think we're always pleased, aren't we, in the game, if they kind of echo your sentiment during the commentary. And I felt that he had obviously seen the manager previously, Muslic. They played against each other, their teams in Belgium, and he recognised that they were going to try and be aggressive from the front. And I did see that from Argyle. They were trying to close, but the problem was they were just going ones and twos and it wasn't a collective. And I think Burnley varied their play. They played short, they tempted Argyle onto them, and then they just played a little bit longer and they played down the side, which exposed obviously the outside centre halves and got in behind the wing back. So I thought it was a real obvious game plan to me. He also had that runner in Josh Laurent to join in with Fleming to get beyond him. He had an exceptional game. I was really torn between him and Zian Fleming for man of the match, but obviously I went for the latter with my striker's hat on. So I thought they were brilliant, Burnley. I think they're an excellent team, and that should do the confidence in the goal-scoring stakes no end of good as they look to improve in that regard. But for Argyle, it's really difficult because the sentiment is that they need three or four new players. Are players going to want to go to Plymouth now? Are they going to be able to entice them? Are they going to be willing to pay the extra money and the extra wages with the predicament looking pretty damning and pretty obvious what the outcome of the season is going to be? So it's a difficult position, but not a lot of it falls at the door of the new head coach. He's been given an opportunity. I think it's more the constant changes in that regard is probably being problematic for the players, trying to flick between different styles and different instruction. I think that's difficult for any player.
I think they're dreading the Liverpool Cup tie now. It looked like a good draw at the time. It looked like a good draw, didn't it? Oh, brilliant. We got Liverpool at home. And then you put in a horror show like that and you're thinking, oh, no.
6 points clear, or 6 points away from safety. They are. Clarkey, we'll skip over the fact that we were so in love with Miron Muslic for that speech that he gave to the players last week. And I'll ask you instead about Morgan Whittaker. Muslic said after the game, he was in the selection for the squad, but he didn't turn up to the game. He was pictured in the stands. One will deduce from that he decided he didn't fancy it. Obviously linked with a move away. Is this a tactic that you can have any sympathy from the player? Do you reckon his agent's been in his ear? What's going on here?
No, I got no time for this kind of behaviour from Morgan Whittaker. You shouldn't be able to do that. You know, you should fine him heavily for it. Look, you can want a move and you can crave it, but it's not the right way to go about it, is it, to refuse to play, especially if you just don't turn up. We just turn up late. I mean, he's been linked with Burnley, isn't he? So maybe, you know, he felt weird about that. I don't know. But if I'm Scott Parker, I see that as a red flag. Personally, I think, do I actually want a player that is willing to behave like that and be so disrespectful to the club's support, to the new manager? And let's be honest, Morgan Whittaker has been pretty dreadful this season. Yeah, he scored a good goal in the cup against Brentford, but for me, he's been way too enigmatic. He's looked like a player that has lost interest. And, you know, I love his talent. I love his ability to score goals, but I would question his attitude and application. And as a consequence, if I was a manager at the top end of the Championship, I wouldn't touch him. Just wouldn't go near him.
Well, we'll see what happens with him in the closing days of the window. Big win for Burnley, though. First time they scored more than two goals in a league game since August. So they are third in the Championship table. They're 2 points behind second place Sheffield United, who, Adrian, you saw on Tuesday night. They look well and truly back on the horse now, right? Third win on the spin here. Rhian Brewster with a rare goal against his old club. This was pretty much a perfect night for Chris Wilder then.
You wouldn't have said that at half time, honestly. Swansea, who were, Sam saw, didn't he, in the South Wales derby, where they were really poor. Excellent in the first half, played with great energy, didn't just knock it around for the sake of it. They went at Sheffield United, had, you know, drove at them at speed. The changes that he made paid off. The manager, Luke Williams, Bianchini up front, got himself a rebound goal, but was lively. Miles Pierre-Harris was the one that really caught the eye. Hasn't really got a trick as such, but he's quite a powerful runner. Once he gets in his stride, he's a bit of a handful, and he had...
He's a powerful runner, Clarkey. We know this boy because he's from Chelsea, Miles Pierre-Harris. He's a powerful runner because his initials are MPH, so he's not going to be anything else, is he?
I hadn't even put two and two together. You're right. But yeah, he had Reece Norrington-Davis on toast, had him booked, and just ran at him every single time. Should have got a penalty. I don't know if you saw this, but he basically just got hauled down. He didn't get hauled down. He got fouled once or twice and he refused to go down. He wanted to stay on his feet and try and score. And he got zero reward from the referee for that. So the next time players go down easily, I'll actually understand it because referees won't give pens if players stay on their feet. It's a joke. But anyway, Swansea were great. Sheffield United, I'm not joking, abysmal. And I was really pleased because at half time I'd said on air, that must be the worst 45 they've had all season, Sheffield United. He's got to do something at the break. And he sent them out, I reckon, 6 minutes early. And he got three subs ready. And they came on at the break, Chris Wilder. So that tells you he was very unhappy for the first half. And then the second half was completely different. And the subs made a big difference. The right back, Siriki. He can run as well, blimey. He got to the byline a few times, pulled one back for Brewster, who scored a great volley. Tyrese Campbell was magnificent when he came on. Lovely touches, great movement. I thought Swans were unlucky with the red. I don't know if you guys saw this, but what did you make of it? Because for me, it looked worse than what it was. I think Harry Darling was late on that challenge, Matt, but it was not malicious. He didn't go in to do the player, did he? I think it was on Brewster.
Yeah, a little bit overzealous, the referee, potentially. But yeah, no doubt that that's a massive moment in the game. And I mean, Luke Williams might be saying, I really could have done without that because he's already in a bit of trouble, isn't he, given what happened on Saturday. And then to go and lose a home game straight off the back of that, he'll be feeling the heat.
Yeah, but they shouldn't feel the heat on the back of this because they played good for 45 and then in the space of 5 minutes, they concede and they go down to 10 men. Then you've got a big mistake for the winning goal from Josh Key. It's a long ball from Harmer over his head and he makes the cardinal sin of taking his eyes off the ball. He turns one way, he turns the other. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know where Campbell is and he fouls him. And from that moment on, I have to say Swansea sort of bit down on their gum shield and they stuck in there and they might have got an equaliser. So I didn't think they were that bad actually. And Sheffield United were good in the second half, but maybe it's a slight worry how bang average they were up until half time. So yeah, based on what I've seen of all of the top teams in the flesh, I'd probably say Leeds and Burnley have impressed me the most. This wasn't amazing from Sheffield United.
All right, well, Sam saw the team who were in fourth place on Tuesday night. That's Sunderland. They won at Derby. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Sam, might even have been last week, that Sunderland's away form might be what stops them from truly challenging for automatic promotion. So this is an important result for them. But the key talking point was not the goal that won it, but the goal that didn't stand. What on earth was going on with that?
Yeah, I've been tested this week, haven't I? utter bemusement. I kind of went through it chronologically when we had the luxury of running in a few replays and wasn't offside. If there was a foul, it was a foul by Ebu Adams on Isidore rather than the other way around. And yeah, I mean, you could say it was potentially handball, but the referee didn't give it for the handball because he didn't blow his whistle. He walked back to the halfway line. So it's for offside. Where he gets the instruction from, I have no idea. It's a goal, I think. You know, there's no more I can say on it. And you're always worried. And yeah, maybe me and Clarkey, given the nature of our job now, should know every rule in the book. And I'm always a little bit reticent and a bit reluctant to go too heavy just in case someone, Dermot Gallagher, pulls me up and says, no, this is why it was disallowed. But I think categorically I can say this is just a hell of a mistake from the officials. I mean, he's had a beast of a few days, hasn't he? And then, I don't know if it was just before or just after, but he went on a Maisie from the edge of his own box and he probably should have squared it to a teammate. But, I mean, the athleticism, the pace was just exceptional. And, yeah, it's not been a great few days for him. He was celebrating wildly at full time. So, yeah, it shows that there's a real togetherness there. I love the manager. I really love Regis Labrys, partly because I watched his pre-match presser. Classy. He's a classy chap. And also his team play some lovely stuff. And I've not had the luxury of seeing them too often this season. So to watch them live and see the patterns that they build with, you can see that they are meticulously drilled. And also at the moment, He's getting the two guys up front in tandem, which is always nice for me to see, a little bit of a throwback. So Meyenda obviously got the goal. Isidore's a constant threat. So if they can't play through via Bellingham, obviously Lafie and Rigg, I mean, that's a dreamy kind of support cast that Sunderland have got there now. But they've got the real directness of the front too. So there's different ways to hurt the opposition. And, you know, if Derby had got something here, this would have been certainly one of their results of the season. I don't know if you've seen this, but, I mean, Cashin has got an injury. He might be off. Cashin, there's strong interest in him. Curtis Nelson's
out for the season.
Nelson's played every minute for Paul Warne since he arrived. He's out for the season. Phillips wasn't available. He still went with a back three. Adams was in the back three. He's been one of their best players this season. But this is a patched up Derby County. So they gave a pretty good account of themselves. I think, you know, certainly in the first half, the supporters would have been infused, and the disappointment and the mood, the bad mood, probably wasn't directed towards Paul Warne on this occasion, because his players gave everything. But he's clearly on thin ice at the moment with the supporters and needs a result.
Yeah, a few managers in that position. We'll touch on a couple of games that we didn't see live, but are worth comment briefly anyway. A manager who's not in trouble, Adrian, is very much Frank Lampard. He really seems to fit the Championship manager mould, right? A 2-0 win at Blackburn, back-to-back victories. They've only lost one in six. Is this a new manager bounce, or is it a bit more sustainable, do you think?
I just think it's a nice, solid start from Frank Lampard, who hasn't been dealt the easiest of cards. Obviously, Hadji Wright's out, and Ephraim Mason-Clarke, who started really well for him, he's missing at the moment as well. So what I like about what Lampard's done is that his reacted, and he's thought, actually, why try and play the same shape when I've lost, you know, two wingers? I'll go with wing backs. So he's gone 3-5-2. He's gonna be two up front because he's got two strikers fit in Ellis Sims and Brandon Thomas Asante. And that had a nice balance to it, I think, in the game. Look, they rode their luck in this one at Blackburn in the first half. The goalie, again, that's been a problem for Cough. I don't know how many times they've changed their goalie this season. A lot. But Oliver Dovin had a good game, made some really good saves early on, and kept them in it. And then in the second half, Coventry stepped it up a little bit. And Sims gets a header, and Radoni, lovely touch from him inside the box. And then he flashes it across the face of goal for Thomas Asante to score. Fourth clean sheet in six for Cov. So, yeah, signs of progress. I thought they were opened up a bit at times. Maktar Gueye caused them a lot of problems. I'm still not really sold on the back three, but four clean sheets in six tells you that he's improved them out of possession. So, yeah, look, they're probably looking at the playoffs now and thinking, you know what, we're not going to talk about it, but we might be able to nick a place there. I mean, there's only two spots up for grabs, but Cov might steal in.
Yeah, it looked like it could have been very different this game. A lot of desperate defending in the early part from Coventry, loads of set pieces. Gueye had seven attempts up front for Blackburn, but goal scoring a big problem for them at the moment. Failed to score in five of the last eight, in which they've only won once. So it's a little bit of a dip for Blackburn. But the flip side, on those goal scorers, Thomas Asante linked with various clubs, hasn't he, the last few days. Back-to-back goals first since October. And Sims with his first since that month as well. So maybe he's struck upon what potentially could be a good strike force in the absence of my mate, Hadji Wright.
So Coventry on the charge, but the form team in the league and the one who might be set to make a late playoff push are Queen's Park Rangers, Sam. A 2-1 win for them at Hull, their fourth victory in succession in the league. We'll forget about what happened in the FA Cup. Clarkie was telling us that the pitch is a problem for Ruben Selles up at Hull, and it is absolutely dreadful. Didn't look like too much of an issue for your boy Sato, though. Brilliant goal from him, making a mockery of the mud patch that is the pitch there.
Yeah, the first one was good fun. Good old scramble, ball ricocheting around. Kenneth Pyle getting the opener. And then, yeah, brilliant goal from Saito, who probably is the one, forgive me if I've forgotten someone, but the one relatively new recruit who has turned up, I think, albeit sporadically throughout the season, but he's shown some class and some nice moments. So that was a brilliant goal. And I don't think they were as convincing here as they were at Argyle at the weekend, albeit that looks like that was a a foregone conclusion now, given how they performed last night against Burnley, but they could have won by more. In Devon at the weekend, last night felt like a big win. I thought typically that QPR would go there and lose by a goal to nil. So I was really pleased to see that result come in. Listen, they're a good side. And when I've seen them recently at Loftus Road, they play some nice stuff. And the confidence is evident for all to see. But I think it's built on hard work. I think it's built on the structure of the team. Defensively, they're pretty good. Morgan's been a revelation in midfield, as I've said. And I think that it's a more pragmatic QPR this season, which has garnered results and in turn has brought a great level of confidence. It nearly went awry the other night. A couple of changes. I don't know if you saw this, but Harrison Ashby came on and Madsen, and it nearly went pear-shaped, and he actually replaced Ashby after having a really difficult time. Colback coming on, he'd already withdrawn Coley and Chair earlier in the half, and they were the two, Sato and Alfie Lloyd, who came on, and as it transpired, were the big difference makers. But those couple of late changes, which actually took away some energy and some legs from that QPR team, very nearly cost them, having seen Hull come back in. But they've got a chance. They got a chance because I think it's since the November international break, they're on a par with Leeds and Burnley. That's how good they've been. They're joint, I think, with Leeds over the last 10. They're the in-form side in a division. And yeah, they're getting the results and they're playing well now as well. And that maybe wasn't the case initially with this run. So very, very exciting.
Yeah, well, they're flying. The other team who just can't stop winning at the moment are Oxford. They beat Luton 3-2. We're going to talk about the Hatters later. We might well talk about that shocking lack of marking for the winning goal in this game. But, Clarkie, we need to pour some more praise on Gary Rower. He was on Sky on Wednesday night for their coverage with a big grin on his face, and you can understand why. Unbeaten in seven, won five of those. They got the same points as Coventry. They're only 1 point behind Norwich. I mean, there's absolutely no chance of them going down now, it looks like.
It feels that way, doesn't it? I think we did say at the time when Buckingham went that we didn't think Oxford were that bad, and that I think we were all quite confident that they would have enough to survive anyway. So I did think it was a bit of a panicky decision at the time, but you can't fault what Rowett has done. Definitely, you know, unbeaten in seven is impressive. A good signing. It's always nice when one of your signings comes up trumps early doors. You know, Michael Hellick, I think it's a good pickup, really. He will always chip in with goals, and he's a pretty, you know, strong defender, isn't he? So, all three goals from defenders here. I like the fact that he's got some wingers going. You know, he's given, you know, Buckingham kind of flitted in between. He couldn't really make his mind up over a few of the wingers because wingers, you know, I was one. We are naturally a little bit inconsistent. You don't always get, you know, not every game's the same. Game state, you know, the style of the match can make a big impact on how a winger performs sometimes, as does service. But yeah, he's sticking with Plaheta, and I think he had a really good game. Siriki Dembele as well. He's a maverick that maybe spent most of his time on the bench, really, or injured previously, but he's come in and looks good. So it's a great win. I mean, they probably look at bits and pieces like Mark Harris didn't really happen for him in the game. Matt Phillips as a number 10, they tried it, probably didn't really work for Oxford here, but thanks to some pretty shoddy Luton defending, you know, they get the job done, Oxford. So yeah, they're absolutely flying. So well done, Rowett. I've always liked Gary. I think he's a nice lad and clearly a pretty savvy manager. Yeah, he's not gonna thrill you with his football that often, but you know, I think Oxford fans will be pleased. I know the game before, they were really ferocious with their press as well. He's got them working for him, that's for sure. So yeah, onwards and upwards. But you're right, I've just said Coventry could steal into the playoffs. Yeah, I wouldn't dream of saying that about Oxford, but yeah, they've got the same amount of points. So yeah, it's just, yeah, that's the perception, I guess. They may be overachieving, Coventry have underachieved. So that's why we're saying it.
Well, Rowett will be really looking forward to the weekend as he goes back to one of his old clubs, Stoke, with a point to prove. Stoke beaten by Pompey on Wednesday night. Let's head back to Tuesday and go into League One, though. Bolton's home reverse to Charlton spelt the end for Ian Evatt. Sacked as Bolton boss the following morning, while Mutual consented, according to the official statement. Feels like the season for mutual consenting, doesn't it? Sam, it also feels like this has been on the cards for a while.
It does, yeah. It's not the most recent results. I think from that playoff defeat, really, if you remember, probably were quite clear favourites and just didn't turn up on the day. And I think there's been a frustration directed towards Ian Everett since the start of the season. Me and Clarkie caught up at the Wrexham game, early part of the campaign when we were both covering the game, and there was definitely pressure on him then. And there was a want from the supporters probably to see something a little bit different. I think there's been a frustration that it's all been a bit samey, which I think has its strengths, you know, in a head coach who's really consistent with his ideas and his messages. But yeah, it's been a really difficult season. 3 wins in the last 9, thumped by Huddersfield at home, some defeats to local rivals as well, never goes down particularly well. And to add to that, there's been obviously his fallout with a Shrewsbury player, I think it was, and then something latterly where he had to apologise, or the club had to apologise for something that happened in the aftermath of one of the away games. So I think there's been a lot going on, not just on the pitch, but off it. He's always had the backing, hasn't he, of the owners, staunch backing, and rightly, because I think, you know, we always speak about that improvement that Bolton have had every year in terms of their league finish. And that's clearly been evident, but it feels like the right time. And no question, he will be not short of suitors, because I think he's, you know, really clever, really individual kind of style of play, not akin to many other teams that are applying their trade in League One, League Two. So probably the right time for a separation.
Clarkie, is Stephen Schumacher the new Alan Kirbishley? I know that he's favourite for this job. It feels like he's been favourite for about the past 5 jobs that have come up, and he hasn't got any of them. Is this the next move for him, or who else is going to come in? I've seen Sam Allardyce in a spectacular return has also been mooted.
Got to do that.
JJ Okocha is assistant manager. Yes,
could obviously. We do a special? Could we do a Sam Allardyce podcast special if that was to happen? We wait for a couple of games just to you know, make sure we've seen what he's churning out, and then we do one.
It would be absolutely nuts, wouldn't it? Yeah, but look, this is football. You never know. But I think he has spoken up and said he wants to go back there. But I think in more of an overseeing capacity. But I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want Big Sam to be sort of
mentoring El Hadj Diouf as the manager.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a gaffer with Big Sam as the director of football. That spectre would loom large over you, wouldn't it? I don't think that'd be right. Schumacher's a good shout. David Wagner's been linked because I think he's worked with the recruitment chief, Chris Markham at Huddersfield. Rob Edwards is a name that actually I think might be perfect for them, because I think he would like to play more football, Rob Edwards. I think it was just the cards he was dealt at Luton. I'd like to see what he could do with the Bolton team. I really like what Everett did. I really like watching them. I think the football's excellent. By and large, I thought he did brilliantly. But that day at Wembley, when I was there, it was damaging. And I just don't think he could come back from it. I think it was almost impossible. Such was the crushing disappointment. I just felt he was up against it from that moment on. I liked his statement. He was really magnanimous and sort of very, full of praise for the owners, the club, the fans. Yeah, he walks away with his head held high, Ian Everett. And after he goes, he needs to get himself off to the Caribbean or somewhere like that. This time of year, it's beautiful, isn't it? Get himself up over to St. Lucia or something. Have a couple of weeks off and then start to think about coming back in March, April, when the late season sackings come around. Because he will be in demand. I think he's a very good manager. One of the very best outside of the top 2 leagues in England. I've got no doubt about that. So, he will be back.
Totally agree. And Rob Edwards, great shout. I'm just surprised that Rob Edwards has never had a loan spell at Bolton. I was sure of it, but he's played for Blackpool and Barnsley. No loan spell at Bolton. Feels right. Just quick Plymouth update. Driving rain now, so I'm not going to get to see the seafront. But what I did want to say on Schumacher, given that I'm in Plymouth, and I didn't realise just how strong the links were for him to come back. I mean, would Plymouth Argyle this morning be in the predicament they're in now? Come back. for the last three or four games. Do you know what I mean, Clarkie? They'd have a much better opportunity of staying in the division, right?
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't, could they?
Oh, they couldn't now, surely. But I mean, if they'd have done it, you know, 3 weeks ago, we wouldn't be talking about Argyle being pretty much relegated this morning, would we? They'd have a fighting chance.
Yeah, well, the home form was the thing with Plymouth, and they've put in two no-shows, really, at home. So, was it, yeah, two or three? You think he's had two home games, has he?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying...
Three that, now, he's had three.
He's had three. The first was a goalless draw, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it was a draw with Hull, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So three really bad games in front of the home support. Oh, dear.
Yeah, there was one of us who did suggest that maybe Stephen Schumacher would be back before the turn of the year. Got to take my advice, guys. Got to take my advice. There has been a managerial change in League Two. Barrow have named Andy Wing as their new head coach on a 2.5-year deal after agreeing compensation with Solihull Moors. Replaces Stephen Clements, who was sacked on Saturday. They are winless in their past five League Two matches, 8 points above the relegation zone. Therefore, Clark, he's probably got enough of a buffer not to be overly concerned with relegation, but will want a decent result against Grimsby in his first game on Saturday, particularly that it's a home game.
Yeah, look, yeah, no, that Barrow shouldn't be going down. No chance, really. They got an okay squad, a decent budget, but they are on a horrible run. They won five of their first seven this season, Barrow. Since then, 12 points collected in 18 games, which is relegation form, isn't it? So, yeah, he inherits a team that's really low on confidence. They're actually not that bad at the back. You know, they've been quite solid. They just don't score very many. Their finishing's been pretty dreadful. I think they got the third worst conversion rate in League Two. But I understand the change being made, absolutely. Wing is really popular. I know that they, wherever he's been, he's, as a player and as a manager, they've really liked him. He did great, I think, with Banbury. They got them up to the National League North and then did superbly with Solihull Moors. It was, yeah, you had to feel for him last year. Didn't, you know, lost in the playoff final, lost in the trophy final, both on pens. But now he gets his reward for that, you know, by getting his first job in the EFL. He's meant to be a really likeable lad, Andy Wing. He'll go in there, try and get the lads on side, try and get the spirit up, and get them scoring goals. If you look at Solihull's record under him, they scored plenty. And that's the issue that Barrow have had. So, yeah, they've become probably a little bit more attack-minded, I would imagine, under Andy Wing. We'll see how it goes.
Good luck to them. So they're playing Grimsby on Saturday. Big weekend ahead. We're going to preview some of the key games next. And let's start with a massive match for two managers looking for their first league wins with their new clubs. Luton hosting Millwall. Clarkie, are Luton actually going to get relegated again here? It's not looking particularly good for them, is it? We mentioned the goals that they conceded at Oxford on Tuesday. They are, according to the table, the second worst team in the division at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe it. I'm stunned by it. But that is where they find themselves. And he's got to restore confidence very quickly, hasn't he, Matt Bloomfield? Obviously, green shoots of recovery here in the performance at Oxford, twice taking the lead. He's got a really good midfield, in my opinion, you know. Good legs, good determination, a little bit of quality as well, you know. Nakamba, Clark, Krause, I really like. I think he's an excellent player. He's got strikers who can score. He'll want Alfie Doughty back in his starting lineup, probably for this game. He was back on the bench, wasn't he? I think he's had a couple of months out. You know, you don't realise what you've missed until they're gone sometimes, and Doughty's absence has been quite key. So yeah, it's a huge game. There's no real honeymoon period for Bloomfield, is there? It's just, they're just desperate for wins. The issue has been at the back all season, hasn't it? And goodness me, the defending was pretty horrific in the game. What I will say, rather than going into one about what they did wrong, it's just, you know, it's poor marking, players not taking full responsibility, poor communication, etc., etc. What I hated to see was the reaction of the Luton players. A lot of finger pointing, a lot of shrugs of the shoulders, a lot of it's your fault. No, it's not. It's your fault. that's bad. And Bloomfield's got to get stuck into the boys and get rid of that sort of blame culture. But then, you know, Holmes at centre back and Hashioka at right back. I don't know. I think they just need better defenders. They need fit defenders, don't they? So yeah, hopefully they can get them back ASAP. Mark McGuinness is a good player, but he can't do it all on his own. But they're poor at the back. But then you can look at the other end and say they've scored 12 goals from open play all season. I mean, how many matches they had? Is it 26, 27, 20, you know,
28
matches, 12 goals from open play. I mean, that is less than one in two games. I mean, that is awful, considering they were a Premier League team last season. So, yeah, a lot of work for old Bloomers to do. But I refuse to believe they'll go down. I still think they'll end up sort of lower mid-table.
We shall see. Millwall, their opponents. Sam, your old temporary home. I really, really enjoyed Alex Neil calling conceding late against Cardiff nearly criminal. Not criminal, but nearly. I'm not going full in. I've only been here a couple of weeks. I don't want to slaughter the players, but that was nearly criminal.
Yeah, it's not been a good start, has it? One of those where Neil Harris and the job he did all of a sudden looks like was a pretty good one. I think we'd all be unanimous in that. Well, he was doing a terrific job this season. So this is, on the face of it, a game which Luton will be, I'm sure, expecting to get something from and hoping desperately they can, because Millwall have got mounting injury issues. They lost two right backs in this game. It was a young lad, Tristan Kramer, who's from Brentford, did very well at Exeter on loan this season, who ended up at right back. He's a centre half by trade, but they lost Leonard and McNamara, I think, in the same game. They've sold their best player. Remain SA to Palace. Millwall, so they've kind of replaced that loss with the flair of Scanlon, who's a loanee from Liverpool. He's been out for the majority of the season with a back problem. And Bangura Williams, who's really caught the eye with a great assist the other night against Cardiff and scored against Dagenham and Redbridge. So there feels like, I don't know if it's out of necessity, but there's a bit of a sea change going on at Millwall in terms of, I think, getting younger players and encouraging a younger average starting 11 to take to the field. But Alex Neil needs a result. That's no wins in four, and it's a pretty tricky period for them at the moment. So this is a big game, especially with Portsmouth coming up on Tuesday for them, where it'll be decided. I think Matt Bloomfield's Wickham were pretty strong in this department, which I will come on to, but set pieces, I think, for Luton and Millwall, always Luton lead the way, 14 set pieces, and Millwall scored 10 as well. So look out for that. Don't anticipate it being too high scoring, but certainly a big game, because Millwall don't want to start having to look over their shoulders.
Millwall will look at what Oxford did, putting balls in the box, won't they? And say, well, they're weak. Yeah. So, yeah, Millwall will fancy their chances, definitely from set pieces.
Big game, that one. One of the early kickoffs in the Championship on Saturday. In League One, Matt Bloomfield's old club, Wickham, continue their quest for promotion at Adams Park. They are hosting Northampton. They'll have James Berry among their number, having joined from Chesterfield. Still no sign of a new manager. Sam Grayson, interim charge, oversaw a big win at Mansfield last week. Just had a quick look at who's in the running, Sam. Won't surprise you to know that Stephen Schumacher's amongst the names. he is behind Klaus Norgaard, Des Buckingham and Russell Martin. At the moment, I guess there's no big rush to appoint somebody if the interim's doing okay. But yeah, I mean, you'd like a bit of stability in there before too long.
Yeah, interesting. Russell Martin's got the history there, but that would be a huge surprise.
Stylistically, I mean, that just doesn't fit at all, does it? Russell Martin and Wickham?
Possibly not, but obviously there's been, I think, change in that regard under Matt Bloomfield, where they've become a bit of a hybrid, where you have that spirit and the messages that come out and the way he speaks. Matt Bloomfield is kind of akin to what Gareth Ainsworth was and is, but you've seen probably a slightly different style on the pitch, where they can play a little bit more because they've got more technically efficient midfield players in particular, and still got the threat up front with some brilliant athleticism and goal threats. So I think that has changed. Liam Richardson, I noticed, always in the running, another one for jobs at this level. But yeah, I'd maybe agree with you. Sam Gray seems to have, I think, the support of the players. I saw Sam Vokes celebrating really enthusiastically, having even not got on the pitch the other day. So he can be probably well aided by people like him and McCleary. This is Sam Grace I'm talking about, who I think, I haven't done too much digging, but I think he's got history at the club or as a local guy. So maybe that would be a sensible way to go. Big game for them, one you'd expect them to win. Although, much better away from home, Wickham, which I hadn't really grasped. 30 points against 24. And they've almost scored double the amount of goals away from Adams Park. So maybe that's a case of teams coming and being a little bit more conservative, as Huddersfield probably were a few weeks ago, where they left Buckinghamshire with maximum points, but winning 1-0. So it's only Huddersfield and Birmingham that have gone to Adams Park and won. But yeah, interesting that Wickham seem to do their damage away from home. But yeah, you'd expect them to win here at 6, maybe 7 signings now, in light of what you've just said. So they've really had a go as well in January at strengthening. And I fancy them to win here, and going to be a fascinating couple of weeks to see if they do replace Matty Bloomfield with a permanent manager, and also the threat of Joe Lowe leaving. I think he's been linked to various clubs, the central defender. So I think there's going to be a little bit of disruption, but if they can keep the majority of the squad together with the additions, you know, I think they're there for the long haul.
Joe Lowe, oh no, don't go. You can hear Wickham fans saying all across Buckinghamshire. Kevin Nolan at Northampton, Clark, he's struggling to get his feet under the table. I mean, yes, he's got the comfort of knowing that he can go back and be Sam Allardyce's assistant at Bolton if it all goes wrong. But they are pretty close to the relegation zone. Just to put, they've got a 5-point gap between they and Crawley, but Crawley have 2 games in hand on them. It's not like he went into a team that was winning every week, but he needs to try and turn this around pretty quickly, and they've got a fairly tough run of games coming up too.
Yeah, but they could make life difficult for Wickham, because they're solid. I mean, there's in the last 4 matches under Kevin Nolan, there's been a grand total of 4 goals scored. So, you know, they've been tight encounters, and he'll try and make this tight, won't he? Whether Northampton are good enough, we'll have to wait and see. But defensively, he's got sort of some of his best players back. Ioma's in now, he was out for a while. So was Willis, he's back. McGowan's there as well. It's really going forward that Northampton, they need to score more goals. They need to create a lot more. I was looking at some of the numbers in terms of big chances in League One. They've had the fewest of all the teams by 5. They've had 19 big chances all season. Wickham have had 39. Huddersfield, who lead the way, have had 51. So that's the difference. You look at the goal charts. Cameron McGeehan, who's a midfielder, who sort of crashes the box, he's the top scorer on 7. No one else has got more than 3. And the chance creators, well, Mitch Pinnock, who plays at wing-back, Tariq Fosu, who's sub more often than not, and Sammy Shushane, who sort of plays in central midfield. They create almost all the chances. The next highest chance creator at Wickham outside of those 3 is Tyler Morton, and he hasn't played since the 5th of October. So, I mean, that tells you everything, doesn't it? It's absolutely mad. What he's done to address that maybe is he signed Terry Taylor, great name, on loan from Charlton. Sounds like a player from the 70s, doesn't he, Terry Taylor? But yeah, he's come in sort of a creative, technical midfield player. So hopefully he will add something for Cobblers.
Yeah, there was a lot of noise at Charlton earlier in the season from the supporters about him getting more game time. So he could be a decent addition. Quick League One quiz before we go, because I just noticed something that just blew my mind over my granola this morning. How many away goals, when you consider that Wickham have scored 34 away goals, how many away goals have Stevenage scored this season? I'll give you a window of 2.
Okay, so let's say they've had, say, 14 away games. I think they've scored 8.
I've just looked it up because I had the League One table in front of me. Goodness me.
Go on.
I mean, is this a misprint? Stevenage have played 14 times on the road in the league this season. They've scored 3 goals.
3?
That is really, really bad. And I'm sorry if you're a Stevenage fan listening who's been to any of those away games.
Well, let's work it out. How much have they spent? Right, Stevenage fans going to those 14 away games, you know, 30 quid a ticket, you know, that's about 400 quid, 500 quid on tickets, petrol, probably more, You're talking a couple of grand outlay, aren't you, to see three goals?
It was worth it on the 19th of October because they won 1-0 at Mansfield. But other than that, it was a 2-1 defeat at Peterborough a couple of weeks before that. And back in August, they scored a meaningless stoppage time penalty to make it 2-1 against Huddersfield. They didn't even get to celebrate that one. You got our sympathies if you are one of those Stevenage supporters. In League Two, the derby that's not a derby, but that evokes emotion of plenty at Stadium MK. It is, of course, MK Dons against Wimbledon. Oh, crikey, clarky. MK Dons' promotion hopes are fading rapidly. Lost six of their last eight, only won one in that time. I would suggest, therefore, that this is the absolute last thing that they need.
Are you going to play me and Clarky saying they're going to get promoted from about 6 weeks ago here? Just put that on the back of me back in Wayne Rooney. You can do a little montage
And me saying Marty Cifuentes was rubbish, yeah. And Clarky saying that Plymouth were going to get relegated the other year.
In 2016-17, yeah.
We can all get it wrong. Do you know what, though? I still wouldn't rule it out. I still wouldn't rule out a late run because it got really good players and they've got good attackers. But yeah, they've been the big underachievers, haven't they? MK Dons. Massively disappointing, really, under Scott Lindsay, who we all like and rate and whatnot. But it's not happening. And the reason it's not happening is because they can't keep clean sheets. They're too soft at the back. One clean sheet in 21 games. That's awful. Wimbledon have had 4-8. You know, that's the difference. Yeah, loads of the ball they had in their last game and had four shots as well. So they're lacking a little bit of oomph going forward as well. What I will say is that they've brought in a couple of good players so far. Jay Williams, I think, is a good, strong, physical midfielder. He will add something. And Dan Crowley's gone there, hasn't he, from Notts County.
You've been the biggest Dan Crowley enthusiast in the country, I would suggest.
Well, I saw him as a kid at Arsenal and I thought, oh, he's got a chance. And he was really, yeah, good to watch and creative and bubbly and stuff. And for Notts County, I thought he was really good. He has created more chances than anyone else in open play in League Two this season by a mile. He's got nine more key passes in open play than anyone else. And I was looking at it with him, Aaron Demain, Liam Kelly, Joe Tomlinson, Alex Gilby. All of these players have created loads of chances this season. They're all in the top 20. There's five of them for MK Dons. So that side of it shouldn't be an issue. It's, can you defend? Let's see. They've lost three in a row. They'll be mutiny if they lose four in a row in this game, won't they? So, high pressure game. I actually quietly fancy them to turn it on. I don't know what it is. I just think maybe they'll just click in this game and win it well. But the form book tells you that they'll have loads of the ball, miss chances, and concede at the other end and lose a game.
Wimbledon will certainly be confident going into it, Sam, weren't they? Just a point off the automatic promotion places after winning three on the bounce. But they've also won the last three meetings to nil between these two, including once already this season at Stadium MK in the FA Cup.
Yeah, they've been able to find a way to win these games. Definitely got the upper hand. I mean, there's no comparison, is there, really? In terms of form, last eight games, the worst, MK Dons in the division, 4 points. AFC Wimbledon, 17 points, the third best in League Two. Throw in that they got the best defence, far and away now. AFC Wimbledon, just the 19 goals conceded. 1-3 on the bounce against MK Dons' team, who Clarkie's just described having, you know, a multitude of issues at the moment. But yeah, I second what he says. They've got a good team and you would imagine they're going to be competitive in this game. Purely because of that, and also you always get that nice contrast between these teams because Wimbledon will try and be aggressive, will be a little bit more direct, and MK Dons will want to have the ball. What AFC Wimbledon have now is a bit of variation in their setup. I saw them against Gillingham just post-Christmas, played with two number 10s when Romain Sawyers was at the club. Kelly's come into the fold recently as well, the lad they signed from Solihull Moors, or they can revert to playing the front two with an extra midfield kind of anchor, legs in there, with Smith and Reeves and Hutchison's played in there at times as well. Sam Hutchison, who they got as a free agent a month or so ago. So they've been quite savvy in the transfer market. Sawyers has obviously moved on now. Hutchison and Marcus Brown's come in, who's still only 27. Marcus Brown, who was at Oxford and Middlesbrough. So he should be more than good enough to come in and contribute at League Two level. Other players in form, Tilly, wide player who had that amazing start to last season, and Nerville on the other side. I don't know if you've seen much of him. He's a really easy on the eye player, kind of glides across the surface, takes people on. Both of those two contributing assists and goals recently. Exactly what you want from your wing backs in a system where you're very reliant on them. So yeah, it's a game that you would expect AFC Wimbledon to get something from, but because of the obvious needle, that goes a little up in the air. But MK Dons need to find that rhythm and go on a bit of a run. Otherwise, we're going to look particularly stupid.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens when that one goes down this weekend. All right, nearly done for the day. Before we get into predictions and tweets, though, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. Predictions time then. I mean, I don't want to call myself the Queen's Park Rangers of this thing, but I am really having a late season surge as I try and catch up with the boys here. Last week we went Cardiff Swansea, finished 3-0 to Cardiff. I was the only person who predicted that the Bluebirds would get a win in that one. Mansfield Wickham, I said that it would be 2-0 to Mansfield. It was, of course, 2-1 to Wickham. None of us predicted that Wickham would even win that game. And Carlisle Bradford finished 1-0 to Bradford. Me and Clarky both said that Bradford would win. Sam had it pegged as a draw, so that means that I finished with 2 points. Adrian won. Sam with a big fat zero. What's that done to the running totals then, please, Adrian?
Yes. 39 for the boy Parkin, 31 for me, and you are on 25, Matt. So yeah, you're in the mix, mate. And I think that, you know, the form's really poor from Sam Parkin. I think that he is a little bit MK at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah, puts him off the gas. A bit of arrogance in there as well.
Eight points is a big cushion, isn't it, still? I was not expecting that. God, that's going to be a lovely drive home this morning. Looking forward to that. Get some power ballads on and be safe in the knowledge that there's another bit of silverware coming to South West London.
All right, well, let's give you another little advantage here, Sam. You can go first. West Brom Pompey's our championship game. What's going to happen?
Oh, man, I've got no idea here. I mean, Pompey are like Real Madrid at home, aren't they? But slightly different away from home.
Like Stevenage away, yeah.
Like Stevenage away. Oh, God, sorry, Johns. I'll give them a goal. 2-1, West Brom.
Is this when Tony Mowbray gets his first win as his, in his second draw. Spell? Could be close, this one. What do you reckon, Clarkie?
I think he gets his first win. Yeah, I'm going to go. Yeah, because Pompey are so ropey on the road. 2-0 at West Brom.
Okay, I'll go for 3-1 to West Brom. Next up, Huddersfield versus managerless Bolton, which I think, Adrian, it's not a derby, is it, Lancashire-Yorkshire? It's a rivalry, let's call it that, but a big game for both anyway. 1-0
Huddersfield. 1-0? Yeah, 1-0. Gritty, sort of typical local derby game, but yeah, Bolton fall short.
Okay, I think Huddersfield turn it on a bit, and this is where we get the post-match quotes about Bolton stepping up their search for a new manager because they get beaten 3-0. Sam?
Oh, I'd love to say 1-0 Huddersfield, but I'm just not that type of guy. I'm not going to do that to Clarkie, but that's what I add. Old Joe Taylor at the double for Huddersfield, 2-0.
Okay, last game on the board for us this week is Chesterfield against Port Vale in League Two. I'm not saying that I'm filling, but I'm just bringing up the table here so that I can inform
my opinion.
No, you
can't do that. Come to me.
All right. You know what? I am going to go first, and I'm going to go against what the table says. I think Chesterfield starts to reignite their season here with a gritty 1-0 win. What about you, Sam?
16th best home record against the best away record. Don't read anything to that. 1-1. Stinks of it.
Adrian?
Yeah, this is the day. Chesterfield get things going again. Defo. I think they're going to batter them. 4-1.
Wow. That might be the most extraordinary claim of the season. If it comes off, then I'll give you the money myself, as somebody once said. All right. Well, we shall see. We'll tell you how we got on next week with that. Before we go, I've got a tweet of the week, of course. Now, there can be a little element of snark about this particular feature, particularly on my part. But I picked this one, Sam, just because I thought it was really genuinely quite sweet. It comes from Joel Latabodier of Coventry. Picture of him smiling after victory at Ewood Park in the week. I flipping love winning away, man. Up the Cov. And then four blue heart emojis. Feels like he's written that himself from the heart. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yep. I like the first line. Absolutely. I flipping love winning away, man. Up the Cov.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's not saying man up, is he, to the Cov? It's man. He needs a comma in there.
Fine, but again, that makes it more endearing to me, because he's just like, I've got to get this tweet out because I just flipping love winning away with the Cov so much, man.
Anyone that uses the word flipping is fine with me. I'm all for that. Good alternative to the other F word. And yeah, it is a great feeling, Sam. I mean, I didn't get to experience that much because I played for some pretty bad team. But that's not
on the road.
That's not true. I mean, actually, at Stevenage, we were very good at winning away. And there is a great feeling, because you jump on that bus, you might have a few beers, I don't know if they still do that, and you do feel quite good about yourself. Going in, a little bit like your mate Weaver, who loves that sort of analogy about going into someone's backyard and sort of taking the win. That's real. That's a real feeling, right, Sam?
Tunes on, waving at the disgruntled supporters in the streets as they make their way home. Flipping the bird at you, or whatever the terminology is. Yeah, that is a good feeling. That is a good feeling. And now, I mean, it was hell of a buzz when we were playing. So now, with the amount of coverage and what have you, that must be so heightened, you know, when you're on the way home and you've got just, you know, every news outlet and radio, TV discussing it. Whereas in our day, it was teletext and maybe a little mention of the lower reaches of the EFL on the radio at the back end. And so, yeah, I can imagine it's a great feeling. And Coventry on the up, just need to improve their tweeting.
More of a CFAX man myself, I've got to be honest. Shout out to page 302. But well done, Joel. I'm going to give you another like here to bump you up to 955. Well earned, my friend. And that is where we're going to leave this week's podcast. If you're going to a game this week, try and enjoy it. If you're a Stevenage supporter, maybe don't bother going away from home. We'll be back with another show same time next week. For now, though, it is goodbye.